The town of Skidmore wakes up slow on April 11th, 2001. There is a thin frost on the windshields out on West Oak Street, the kind that burns off by 9 in the morning. The grass is the color of old straw, just starting to turn. A grain truck rolls south down Highway 113 with its trailer rattling. Somebody's dog is barking at nothing. Out past the edges of town, the fields are empty and brown, waiting for somebody to plant something in them. Inside a small white house at 304 West Oak, a young man is awake. He is 20 years old, lean, blonde, soft-spoken. He came out of the shower a half hour ago, and now he is moving through the rooms of his father's house with a trash bag in one hand, picking up beer cans, an empty cup, a pizza box. He is humming along to whatever is playing on the radio. His father is in the hospital. His father is coming home soon. His father's house should not look like this when his father walks through the door. His name is Branson Perry. By 3 o'clock that afternoon, he will be gone. Not in the way you go when you mean to disappear. Not in the way that leaves a note, takes a wallet, moves a vehicle. He will be gone in the other way. The way that leaves a back screen door swinging behind you and never comes back. Three people will be within 40 feet of where he is supposed to be. Two of them will be working on a Chevy with the hood up. One of them will be inside the house, washing a dish at the kitchen sink. A pair of jumper cables will leave the house in his hand. The cables will not arrive at the shed they were supposed to be sitting in. When the police finally come, and they will come late, very late, they will find the cables missing. They will mark the shed as searched. And then, 2 weeks later, somebody will quietly walk back into that shed and place those cables right inside the door, just so the story works, just so the math closes. That's how Branson Perry vanishes. Not into the air, into the silence of a town that has built a long, careful tradition out of forgetting. This is Among Monsters. Hello, I'm Maya Vale, and you're listening to Among Monsters, the show where the answer is never the file. The answer is the people, the neighbors, the cousins, the drinking buddy who said too much to the wrong stranger, the girl in the kitchen who watched the boy walk out the back door and has never, in 25 years, told anybody the whole story. Tonight we're going to Skidmore, Missouri, population 285, give or take, a town with one stoplight, a grain elevator, a tavern, and a reputation. A town that, by the time Branson Perry walked out of his father's back door, had already taught itself how to look the other way. A town where a man named Ken McElroy was shot to death in front of 40 people in 1981, and nobody, in the 4.5 decades since, has ever been charged. A town where Branson's own cousin, Bobby Joe Stinnett, would be murdered in a way so unspeakable that the country learned the name of Skidmore for a third time. Three killings in one town. Across one generation, and after every single one, the same answer. Nobody saw a thing. Tonight, we sit in that quiet. We walk through the kitchen. We open the screen door. We follow Branson out into the yard. This is his story. Branson Kane Perry was born on the 24th of February, 1981. The same year a Skidmore mob killed Ken McElroy in his pickup truck on Main Street. He came into a town that had just gotten away with murder. He didn't know that yet. He was a baby. He grew up knowing only the version of Skidmore that everyone agreed to talk about. The version where the hardware store sold roofing nails to people who waved at you in the parking lot. And where football Friday meant something. And where the gossip in the dinner was usually about somebody's daughter. Bob Perry, his father, was a working man, hands like leather, voice like gravel. The kind of dad who fixed things, drank beer at the kitchen table, and didn't say much. Bob's marriage to Branson's mother, Becky, had ended a few years before. Becky lived elsewhere. Branson lived with Bob in a small white house on West Oak. He was, by every account, a good kid. He had finished at Nottoway Holt High School in 1999. He had worked a little roofing. He had spent some time looking after the animals on a traveling petting zoo, which is exactly the kind of job that sounds like a country song lyric until you realize it is also a real job somebody actually has to do. He lifted weights. He spent time outside. He had earned a black belt in the Korean martial art, which means somewhere along the way, this quiet Missouri kid had spent thousands of hours learning how to stand his ground. He had a heart condition. His pulse, on a bad day, would gallop without warning, and he had learned to slow his breath and wait for it to pass. A small reminder that the body is not always under your control. He was also gay. In Skidmore, in 2001, that was not something you put on a billboard. He didn't. His father knew and accepted his son for exactly who he was. But the world outside that small white house was a different country. Branson moved carefully through it. Four nights before he disappeared, the careful walls he had built came down. On April 7th, Branson went over to the home of a neighbor named Jason Bierman. Branson would later tell his father that something was put in his drink. He would say he lost his bearings, that the night blurred, that things happened to him in that house that should not have happened. He would say he believed he had been sexually assaulted. He came home shaken. He came home angry. He told his father everything. Bob Perry, by the accounts of people who knew him, was furious. Not at his son, at the man across the way. He was, according to family, planning to confront him. Maybe more than confront him. He never got the chance. Bob's heart gave out before his temper could. He was admitted to the hospital with chest pain. The doctors stabilized him. They told him he would be staying a few days, which is why Branson Perry was alone in the house on April 11th, which is why he was cleaning, which is why when he picked up the phone, he called the only person he could think of who could help him put things right before his dad came home. He called Jenna. Jenna Crawford had known Branson for years. They were not romantic. They were not complicated. They were friends in the small town way where you grew up in the same orbit and your parents knew each other and you ended up at the same parties and the same gas stations. She came over that morning. The two of them moved through the house together. She did dishes. He took out trash. The radio played. It was the kind of slow domestic rhythm that does not feel important while it is happening, because nothing about it tells you to remember it. Outside, two men were working on Bob Perry's car. The Chevy had a bad alternator. They had grease on their hands. They were doing the kind of favor men in small towns do for each other on a weekday. Not for money, but because somebody asked. And because that is how things get done out there. Sometime that morning, before noon, Jenna would later tell investigators she and Branson got high. Different sources have phrased it differently. Methamphetamine, marijuana. The exact substance has been described differently in different interviews, and only Jenna knows what was in the house that day. There is also another detail in the case file. Mentioned by a family member, Branson, that morning, reportedly had a bottle of Valium with him. Where it came from, where it ended up, and whether anybody else knew about it, nobody has ever fully answered. So already, before noon on the day he disappears, the small white house on West Oak is not just a kid cleaning for his sick father. It is a kid in a quiet crisis. a kid violated 4 nights ago, trying to put a normal afternoon back together over the top of it. A kid using something to numb something. A kid with prescription medication on him that may or may not be his. Around midday, Jenna saw something she would later not be able to explain. She watched Branson walk into the kitchen. She watched him open a cabinet. She watched him reach in, take something out. She could not see what, and walk briskly towards the back door. He did not say where he was going. He did not look at her. He stepped outside. A few minutes later, he came back in. He went on cleaning. He did not bring up what he had just done. When she asked, he changed the subject. A short while after that, Jenna saw something else. She saw one of the two men from the car standing in her kitchen. He was not asking for water. He was not asking to use the bathroom. He was at the same cabinet. He was going through it. His hand was inside the cabinet door. She challenged him. "What are you doing?" He muttered something, mumbled, stepped back, went out the way he came. Whatever was in that cabinet, more than one person in that house wanted to know about it. 3 o'clock came. The two of them were in the same room. Branson stood up. He had the jumper cables in his hand. They were the bulky kind, copper-toothed clamps, dangling cords. He told Jenna, in a casual passing, that he was going to put these in the shed and he would be right back. The shed was 40 feet from the back door. Jenna said, "Okay," or something like that. She didn't watch him go. She was busy with something else. She heard the screen door. She heard it close. She would tell investigators later that this was the last time she ever saw him. Try to picture it. A kitchen window facing the backyard, a screen door swinging on a spring, a patch of cracked concrete porch. 3 steps down, a short walk across the grass that is just starting to come back from winter. The shed at the end of it, a clothesline maybe, a rusted barbecue, a leaning bicycle, the kind of yard you'd see 1,000 times if you have ever lived in a town like this. In that yard, in front of 2 grown men working on a car at the side of the house, a 20-year-old man with a black belt walks towards a shed and does not arrive. No shout, no struggle, no skid of feet, no raised voices, no vehicle pulling out fast, no screaming, nothing. There are only 3 options for what happens in those 40 feet. The first option is that Branson Perry walks to the shed, drops off the cables, and then walks somewhere else. Maybe he keeps going. Maybe he meets someone. Maybe he gets in a car at the curb. The problem with that option is the cables. The cables were not in the shed when the police checked. They appeared 2 weeks later, just inside the door. Somebody else placed them. Branson did not put them away. The second option is that Branson Perry never makes it to the shed at all. Something happens to him in those 40 feet. Somebody in that yard. Somebody arriving. Somebody from inside the house. Someone confronts him, takes him, removes him. This option requires 2 men working on a car to be either complicit or ordinary. Inattentive. 40 feet is not far. A struggle in that yard would have been heard. So either nothing dramatic happened or somebody chose that day to remember nothing. The third option is that investigators have been circling for 25 years. The third option is that Branson Perry walks towards the shed because he was told to. He drops the cables to free his hands. And then he walks somewhere else, with somebody else, by his own legs, into a car or a truck parked nearby, because somebody he knew told him this was the way the afternoon was going to go. That third option leaves the witnesses calm. It leaves no struggle. It leaves a shed with no cables. It leaves a kitchen cabinet that was searched twice that morning by two different people. It leaves a young man in a quiet crisis being walked away from his own life. We don't know which one happened. We know only that he didn't come back. 24 hours later, on the afternoon of April 12th, a woman named Joanne Stinnett pulled up to the small white house on West Oak. Joanne was Branson's grandmother. She was checking on the place for her son Bob, who was still in the hospital. She walked up the porch with the casual familiarity of family. She found the front door wide open. She walked through. The radio was still on. Whatever station it had been playing the day before was still playing. There was no one in the kitchen, no one in the living room, no one in the back. The screen door at the rear of the house was unlatched. The yard was empty. She would later say that something about the house felt wrong in a way she didn't have words for. Doors didn't stand open in Skidmore. Radios don't play to empty rooms. People come home. She didn't call the police. It is hard to fault her. She knew Branson. She knew he had hitchhiked before. She knew he had sometimes disappeared for a couple of days to crash with friends in another town. She locked up the house. She told the family. She waited. So did the rest of them. April 12th passed. April 13th, April 14th, April 15th. By April 17th, 6 full days after the screen door slammed shut behind him, the family finally walked into Nottoway County Sheriff's Office and filed a missing persons report. By the time Sheriff Ben Espy put a search team together, the trail was 48 hours past cold. They walked a 15-mile radius. They searched fields. They beat the brush along the creeks. They knocked on doors. They asked the questions a sheriff has to ask in a town that is going to lie to him. They came back with nothing. Not a footprint. Not a thread of fabric. Not a witness who would say the thing they actually knew. 2 weeks after he disappeared, a deputy walked back through the shed in the backyard at 304 West Oak. He had been in that shed before. He had searched it. He knew what had been in it and what had not. The jumper cables were now in it, just inside the door, right where a man in a hurry would set them down. That is the moment this case stops being a missing person case and becomes something else. Somebody had been back. Somebody knew the story Jenna had told. Somebody decided the story had a hole in it. And somebody quietly walked into that yard, opened the shed door, and patched the hole. This is not what runaways do. That is what murderers do. And the people who help murderers, when they realize a piece of the lie isn't holding. 6 miles north of Skidmore, in a stretch of farmland that the locals call by names that don't show up on most maps, sits a place called Quintman. It is barely a town, a few houses, a grain bin or two, a church, the kind of community where the population sign and the speed limit sign are about the same number. About a mile east of Quintman, in the spring of 2001, there was a house. According to the tips that started coming into the sheriff's office almost immediately after Branson was reported missing, that house was a place where you went to buy drugs. You knew somebody who knew somebody. You drove out at night. You came back with what you needed. The sheriff's deputies in Nottoway County in 2001 knew about the house. Everybody knew about the house. According to multiple tips, somebody had seen Branson Perry there. Maybe on the day he disappeared. Maybe just after. The accounts varied. The location did not. Something happened to Branson, the tips said, in that house. Investigators wanted very badly to walk through that house. They were not allowed to. Sometime between April 11th and April 16th, that house burned to the ground. Total loss. By the time the responding deputy got there, the residents had already cleared out. There was no one to question. There was no structure to walk through. There was a smoking square of black on the prairie. And the wind that comes up over the fields out there. and nothing else. The responding deputy that night was a man named Darren White. He went on, later, to become the sheriff of Nottoway County himself. He has gone on the record about that fire more than once. He has said, in plain language, that the most likely theory in this case is that Branson Perry was murdered in that house, and that the fire was set to destroy any evidence of it. Whoever set the fire did not just burn down a building. They burned down a forensic file. They burned down a blood spatter pattern, a fingerprint, a hair, a fiber. They burned down whatever Branson left behind, and they burned down whatever the people in that house left behind on top of him. It was, in its way, the perfect crime. Set the fire while the boy is still missing. Wait for the family to file the report. Let the small town's slow rhythm do the rest. For 25 years, it has worked. In April of 2003, in a hotel room in Columbia, Missouri, the Boone County Sheriff's Office took a call. A woman was bleeding to death on the bathroom floor of a budget hotel suite. The man with her had attempted to perform a sex reassignment surgery on her with no medical license, no medical training, and no ability to control the bleeding once it started. She survived, barely. The man who tried to perform the surgery was named Jack Wayne Rogers. He was 59 years old. He was a former minister. He had been a Boy Scout leader. The cover of his life looked like the cover of a wholesome American children's book. The inside of his life, when investigators got there, was something else. His home computer turned out to contain a long history of online posts written in the first person on message boards that don't get linked from anywhere respectable. The post described in detail the abduction, sexual torture, and murder of a young blonde male. The writer described the geography of a small Missouri town. The writer described a victim whose age, build, hair color, and physical appearance matched Branson Perry to a degree that made investigators sit up straight. For a time, the case had looked like it had a name on it. Jack Wayne Rogers denied everything. He insisted the posts were fantasies. He said he had never been to Skidmore. He said he had no idea who Branson Perry was. The Nottoway County investigators tried, and tried hard, to put Rogers in Northwest Missouri on April 11, 2001. They could not. They could not get a vehicle. They could not get a credit card receipt. They could not get a witness who said they had seen this minister within 100 miles of West Oak Street. What they had was a confession-shaped piece of writing on a hard drive. What they did not have was anything that would let a prosecutor walk into a courtroom and ask 12 people from Nottoway County to convict. In 2004, Jack Wayne Rogers was sentenced to 30 years in federal prison on charges that were available: the assault, the unlicensed surgery, a child sexual abuse material also recovered from his home. His earliest possible release date was October of 2028. He will be 83 years old. Branson's mother, Becky, sat through that sentencing. When she walked out of the courtroom, she told reporters something that had shaped the case ever since. She said quietly and firmly that having watched Jack Wayne Rogers in that courtroom, she no longer believed he was the man who killed her son. She said the answer was back home. The answer was in Skidmore. Someone in that area knew exactly what had happened, and the time had a way of unraveling secrets. She would spend the rest of her life waiting for the time to do that work. 21 years after the screen door slammed shut behind Branson Perry, a sheriff named Randy Strong stepped in front of a microphone in Northwest Missouri and said something that he had not been able to say before. He said, in 2022, that the Nottoway County Sheriff's Office had identified a suspect. He did not say the name. He did not give a description. He did not promise an arrest. He said only what the law allowed him to say. They had a person. They had a theory. They did not have what the courtroom would require. The thing they needed. The thing they had needed for two decades. was a body, a grave, a set of remains, something physical that would let a prosecutor walk in and say to a jury, here is the boy, here is what happened to him, here is the man who did it. In May of 2024, the sheriff's office got a tip they took seriously enough to bring in the FBI. Two people had came forward. They told investigators they knew where Branton Perry had been buried. They led law enforcement to a piece of ground near Quitman, near an old well, in the kind of empty field where you could put a young man into the earth, walk away, and the only thing that would ever know is the wind. Multiple agencies dug. They did not find a body. They found something almost as telling. They found earth that had been disturbed. They found ground that at some point in the years since 2001 had been opened and filled and opened and filled again. That detail fits one of the longest running theories in this case, the theory that Branton Perry's remains have been buried more than once, that at some point, somebody in the circle of people who put him in the ground got nervous or got cornered and went back at night with a shovel, and that the bones of a 20-year-old young man have been moved across the back roads of Northwest Missouri more than once, because the people who handled them cannot afford for anybody to find them. Which means, somewhere out there tonight, in a field, or in a wood, or under a slab of poured concrete in an outbuilding nobody has thought about in 20 years, Branton Perry is still waiting. And the people who know exactly where he is are walking around the gas stations and the diners of Nottoway County. They are pumping fuel next to people who knew Branton. They are alive. They are old now. Some of them are getting older fast. Time, in the end, is the only ally Becky Cleno had. And time keeps working. I want to tell you what this case did to the family. Because cases like this are never one missing person. They are a slow grinding down of everyone left behind. Bob Perry, Branton's father, never recovered. His health had been bad before his son disappeared. The disappearance broke whatever was left of him. He died in 2004, 3 years after Branton stepped off the back porch. He died with the question unanswered. He died believing he would not see his son again in this life or any other. That same year, in December of 2004, Branton's cousin, Bobby Jo Stinnett, was murdered in Skidmore. She was 8 months pregnant. A woman she had been chatting with online about dogs drove into Skidmore, walked into Bobby Jo's house, strangled her, and cut her unborn child out of her body with a kitchen knife. The baby, a little girl named Victoria Jo, survived. She was found in the killer's home in Kansas the next day. The killer, Lisa Montgomery, became, in 2021, the first woman executed by the federal government in nearly 70 years. Bobby Jo's grandmother, the same grandmother who walked into Bob Perry's empty house in April of 2001 and had found the doors open and the radio still playing, was Joanne Stinnett. She lived to see two grandchildren taken from her by violence in 3 years in the same small town. If you wonder why Skidmore feels haunted, you can stop wondering. Becky Cleno kept fighting. She worked with the CUE Center for Missing Persons. She gave interviews to anyone who would listen. She kept a website. She kept a binder. She kept a phone log. She kept calling the sheriff's office. She did not stop until 2011, when she died. Her obituary said she was preceded in death by her son. She was buried beside an empty grave plot that has Branton's name on it. The plot lists his date of birth. It lists his date of death as April 11, 2001, the same day he disappeared. There has never been a body to put in the plot. A mother engraved her son's death date in stone before any law enforcement agency in the state was willing to admit, on paper, that he was gone. She knew. She had always known. This has been Among Monsters. I'm Maya Vale. In April of 2026, on the 25th anniversary of Branson Perry's disappearance, a member of his family announced a $100,000 reward. The reward is for information leading to two things, and only two things: the recovery of Branson's remains, and the prosecution and conviction of the person or the people responsible for what happened to him. There is a retired police officer in New Jersey who has worked this case on his own time for almost two decades. There is a sheriff's office in Nottoway County that no longer treats this as a missing persons file. They treat it as a homicide. They have a suspect. They have an outline of an answer. What they do not have is the one piece that lets the prosecutor stand up in court. So tonight, I want to talk directly to one person. I'm not talking to the millions who will hear this. I'm talking to the one. You know who you are. Maybe you were in that yard on West Oak. Maybe you were in that car with the hood up. Maybe you were in that drug house east of Quitman. Maybe you were the one who came back and put the cables in the shed. Maybe you didn't do anything yourself. Maybe somebody told you about it late one night in a kitchen after too many drinks. Maybe you have carried a sentence in your head for 25 years and you have never said it out loud to anyone. You don't have to carry that anymore. If picking up a phone feels too big, write it down. Mail it from a post office two states over. The number for the Nottoway County Sheriff's Office is 660-582-7451. The FBI is involved. The CUE Center for Missing Persons is involved. There are quiet ways. There are private ways. But there is no way that erases the weight of what you know, except telling somebody who can do something about it. Branson Perry was 20 years old. He had a heart that raced when it shouldn't. He had a black belt he never got to use to defend himself. He had a father in a hospital bed waiting for him to come pick him up. He had a mother who would spend the next decade of her life writing his name on every piece of paper that would take it. He had a grave dug for him before anyone could prove he was dead. He deserves to be in it. If you have any information about the disappearance of Branson Kane Perry, please contact Nottoway County Sheriff's Office. There is a $100,000 reward. You can also reach the CUE Center for Missing Persons. No information is too small. No memory is too old. Among Monsters is a Fuzzy Life Studios production. Follow the show. Rate it. Leave a review. Share this episode with one person who might pass it to one more person, and one more person, until it lands in front of the eyes that need to see it. Until next time, be kind to the living, be loud for the missing, and remember that silence only ever breaks because somebody finally decides to speak. I'm Maya Vale. This has been Among Monsters.